Roll the tape.
This podcast is protected by copyright and not for broadcast. See rsn.net.au for more details.
Here's Warren Huntley and Dean Lester.
Good morning. Welcome to Correct Weight, a bit of a special edition with a special guest contributor this morning in Chris Nelson, our Queensland form expert. Centre of racing yesterday was at the Gold Coast for Magic Millions Day. It's been the centre of racing all week, Dino. And yesterday, some good competitive racing at Flemington, but the Gold Coast was where it was all happening, and the Godolphin team right to the fore.
Yeah, it certainly was, Warren. It's always an exciting day at Magic Millions. They're big fields and plenty of going on. But at Flemington, we had a good meeting and with the Lister Chester Manifold Stakes, and Godolphin were to the fore there as well early in the day.
And Chris Nelson, and as we welcome you to the program, and you're on yesterday and in good tipping form also. You found Exhilarates in the two-year-old classic. Congratulations on that. How was the day?
Yeah, the day was terrific, Warren. A great day's racing. You found Exhilarates too. We were discussing yesterday morning. So, no, it was a good win, a very impressive win. Great to see Godolphin back in the two-year-old ranks again, and just one of the highlights on a terrific day.
We might have found Exhilarates yesterday, but James Cummings and the team from Godolphin found her about 12 months ago at the sales, and this is how it panned out yesterday.
Champagne Gin at the halfway mark, then the Odyssey by three quarters. Three out, Better Reflection, Unite and Conquer in the cheap seats, doing it hard, four wide. Tsar Sun lurking behind them. So is Movie Roland, so is Dubious. Just looking for a rails run, then Champagne Boom, followed by 05 Glory Hightail. Wider was Batavia, Exhilarates a mile back. In the straight, 250 left to run. The Odyssey went to the lead. Dubious got the rails run to challenge and hit the lead. Hightail runs on strongly and Exhilarates down the outside. 100 metres left to go. Dubious in front. Exhilarates is flashing. Exhilarates after Dubious, and Exhilarates got up and won the Magic Millions. Exhilarates beat Dubious. Third over the line was Hightail. Fourth on shore.
And I'm sure the Blue Army went up as one, as she did win the Magic Millions two-year-old classic. And James Cummings joins us this morning on the back of that victory yesterday. Good morning and congratulations, James.
Yeah, thanks, Warren. Yeah, it was a big moment, a big day for us, and I hope you've got the opportunity to see, like, sort of this sort of passion that the team's got when we get a good horse like her to a big race day, and not only that, but to achieve a little bit of like vindication that the right call, getting back into the yearling market, being involved in Australian racing, like knee deep instead of sort of back of the periphery, and that was a wonderful statement to make, I think, with a well bred filly like her.
I agree, James. And look, the Godolphin operation does so much for racing, even at the grassroots level. But great to see you back at the sales. But another good part of the narrative, I suppose, of this story is that Vin Cox, coming from the Magic Millions to then head the Godolphin operation in Australia from a management point of view, you know, part of that team that then bought the filly that heads back there and takes out the race. Does that add another element of, I suppose, pleasure and satisfaction to the victory?
Look, I'll tell you a couple of things about Vin. He said to me when he started, sat in the boardroom there at Crown Lodge, and he said, "I'm going to Dubai next week. What message do you want me to take with me?" I just have one thing on my mind. I'd love us to start buying some yearlings again. And he said, "Oh, I see it the same way. That's what I'm going to do." So he pitched it to them beautifully. Dubai were on board because, as John Gosden said to me throughout the week, they're not blind to the fact that racing all around Australasia looks like being the future of racing and the real epicentre of racing in the years to come. So the support and the engagement with racing here in Australia is an important thing for Vin and I, from the perspective that it's seen in a positive and a healthy light by Dubai. And I think they voted with their feet, which is the most, it's the most important thing and an important message for us to get. And then I fast forward, after we bought these yearlings, and Exhilarates had her second race start at Gosford, and I was driving back from Agnes Banks just to check on her one Monday afternoon, and he said, "What are you going to do with Exhilarates now?" I sort of run a very just slashing his unlucky second at Gosford, sort of got on before the 600-metre mark, and a 1,000-metre race, not easy to overcome that sort of interference. And I said, "Well, couple of the guys are thinking of just tipping her out, but you know, I'd love to keep her going because I think she's got more than what she showed that day. And he said, totally agree. Let's drive on. Let's run her in the wire, Magic Millions, because you'll at least get that restricted, listed black tie placing if she can flash home and run a place. She improved out of sight at Wyong. She improved again a couple of lengths when she ran last week on the Gold Coast. And I think I don't know what you think, Chris and Dean. You guys do the form pretty closely, but she had to have improved another couple of lengths there yesterday, don't you think?
How did you see it, Dean?
Absolutely, James. And I heard you after the race paying compliment to her mental strength and her ability to cope with what she's had to do in the last few weeks. Is that something you can identify early in her, or is that something that she grew on you as you got closer to, say, yesterday's race?
The beautiful thing, but one of the good things about Exhilarates, and I've seen it in a number of fillies, well-bred fillies in the past that came through Leilani Lodge, is that she wasn't showing us how good she was last preparation. She had it all hidden beneath the surface. She was just lobbing along off the bridle. Everything we did with her, she was able to cope with. But there was no real brilliance being exhibited. And I think that's part of her mental strength. You know, she's not a ball tearing sprinter. She's sharp and she's got a very impressive class, but she doesn't go out there wanting to show that, you know, three times a week in her fast work and in every jump out and every trial. So the first times I started noticing it, the mental strength that she's got is every time we throw a little bit more work at her, she'd just sort of come off the track with her head between her knees, just sort of like it was easy for her, you know. She was just mucking around. She's not tired. She's not blowing. She was copying it so easily. So fast forward to the Wyong Magic Millions race day, and she got squeezed up by a couple of big colts when they were coming out of the barriers. And she, although she got spat backwards, you know, a lot further than expected that day, she sort of is able to regather herself and sort of savage the line despite that. And I think that's pretty rare. It's rare in a two-year-old. It's rare, especially in a small filly. But that's the thing with a good two-year-old, that they tend to have great brains for racing, and they just adapt beautifully to different circumstances. And she's shown a number of times already in her short career that she's got the ability to adapt very quickly.
I think, James, you hit the nail on the head there. Those two runs, the Gosford run and the Wyong run, she ran into trouble on each occasion. And as you said, she picked herself up and she was very strong to the line. I think her last 200 sectionals in those races was the best in the race, or each race. And then she went to the Gold Coast, of course, and she was far too strong there. So she was always going to be suited by the step up to 1,200 metres. Just one question. Start number one, she was a little bit disappointing on paper. Was there some respiratory problems on that occasion?
Yeah, so she pulled up, and she pulled up having a little bit of a funny noise post race, and I'm convinced that riders tend to hear that more often when they get beaten than when they win, because winners don't tend to come back to you and tell you all about the problem. I can only remember one was doing it when they've won, but as far as feedback from the rider goes, but I'm sure it's happened more often than that. She was a late nominee in a very small field in a 1200 meter race, And that, you know, the prize money that she was able to gain there, even if she was just like a fraction not quite ready, I could sense that prize money might come in handy, particularly for a race like Magic Millions. So I've won the 740 metre trial. She went straight to that race, and so I definitely forgive her that. We actually won that race with a sidestep filly called Kia Michi, and she fell across the line and she sort of out muscled Sebra Kate, who also ran in the Magic Millions yesterday. So the race was okay, but that clearly wasn't the run of a Magic Millions winner. But like I said to you earlier, I've seen that with good fillies in the past. I saw Norzita get beaten at Gosford her first start in a race, and I've seen First Seal get beaten at Canterbury her first start in a race. And we're talking about maidens, and these horses are so classy, they should just be winning those races with their heads on their chest. But because they've got that ability to find things so easily in the lead up to those races, when the pressure goes on a long way out, you know that it's new territory for those horses, and that they don't always have that immediate ability to switch on and demonstrate that speed, because they're not keen horses in their work in the interim.
She's shown a good bit of resilience and toughness already by being able to back up and win yesterday. What does the remainder of the two-year-old season hold for Exhilarates?
Well, you know, she's so sound and tough and coped with her racing really beautifully that I wouldn't be afraid to run her a couple more times as a 2-year-old. But we had some early preliminary talks about what we might do with her next, and it's 8 weeks to the Riesling Slipper trial. So that's probably the path we're going to take with her, but she'll be getting back to Osborne Park and having a little reprieve in the paddock there, but not too long, but in enough time to get her back to Crown Lodge and back in the gym and pumping some iron so she could be ready for a day like that.
The day started off well at Flemington also with the 2-year-old victory of Microphone. You talked about how excited the team were at the Gold Coast. Kate Grimwade, who heads up your team down here in Melbourne, was pretty thrilled with the performance of both Orcs and Microphone in the first at Flemington. And I spoke to her post-race and she said, well, could be a good day for the team. She said, I've done my bit. It's over to James now. And you certainly delivered. But what did you make out of the first race at Flemington?
Yeah, look, I thought that... I thought that Microphone held it together on the day really, really well. He didn't get too carried away, which was a bit of a risk with that colt. And he ended up, once he got out onto the track, composing himself really well. I've seen a lot of horses their first start up a straight, stargaze and have a look around and get lost and not show their true ability, but. I was impressed that he was able to dive at the line for a narrow win over a brazen boat filly that Tony McAvoy told us he has a very high opinion of. Linda Hardy looks like she's got a really nice filly there. We were actually underbidder on that horse at the sales last year. And of course, we had the third colt across the line auction. So our two Exceed and Excel colts went really nicely. You could have seen the improvement. Dean, you would have seen him parade. I was watching the parade with my father, actually from the Gold Coast on TV on racing.com, and you could see how soft Microphone looked in the enclosure before the race.
Yeah, he'll certainly improve off that, James, and it was probably good timing that he got onto the track. He was getting a little bit amorous in the mounting yard in the last couple of minutes before he got onto the track, but it was ideal timing, and once he got out there, he was very composed. And it was interesting that Dwayne Dunn virtually took the same path that he did in the trial the week before in that lane that he was down the straight, and the horse had no problem with going in the straight line.
Yeah, which is really encouraging to see them exhibit that sort of professionalism early. And there was no doubt Auckland will jump out of the ground over 11, 1,200 metres. That bit further looks like it's much more up his alley. I kind of wish he got a little bit more cover there, that colt, in order to be a bit stronger late. But, you know, I still think that he did a great job. And my feeling was that there wasn't three lengths between those two colts going into the race, but that was probably justified in the end, only going down by 3/4 of a length. You're right. You were getting a bit amorous in the yard. We actually have when we geld our horses at Godolphin, we have to just go through the right channels and we put together the paperwork and we create what's called a gelding consent form. So there's a gelding consent form already on someone's desk for that horse, Microphone.
Does he know about that?
We always tell them for their last start. We always tell someone has to whisper it in their ear after they're settled up. So we told him, and I think he might have started to forget that warning at the end of that parade, but he did a good job, and I think he staved off that form, that gelding, for a little bit longer.
We're heading towards the Blue Diamond down here in Victoria as our feature 2-year-old of the season. Do those two horses form part of your team heading that way?
Well, there's a number of nice races that we can steer them towards to dip our toe in the water and see if they're the sorts of horses that have the class for that race. Based on their performance yesterday, I'm starting to think that they both have the right credentials. But we also have a really good filly up in training at Crown Lodge at the moment in Sydney by the name of Ethere. Did you see her win a few months ago?
I did. Yeah, really strong through the line and impressive, and even eased up the last little bit, I think.
That's right. And a horse that ran second in that race is Accession. It's won the English Nursery. It's one of the favourites for the English Millennium. He's another Brazen Bow colt. Yeah, I've dropped Brazen Bow a couple of times in this interview. The Norm's team will be happy with him.
But he'll be a free service horse, coming up.
Yeah. That horse Accession's quite a talent. So for her to do that on debut, then I think that reveals that she's quite a talented filly herself. And should probably be one of the top seeds of our team. But, you know, if she goes to a prelude or a preview and finds herself lining up against the Star-Spangled Banner filly, the one at Moonee Valley, I think that'd be a pretty good matchup, because I couldn't help but be impressed by that horse a few months ago when she won it at the Valley.
We've taken up quite a bit of your time this morning. I'd just like to pick your brain about another one that I saw jump out at Flemington on Friday, a two-year-old called Lanagira. Where might he be heading?
Well, I've got a choice to make with him. I could either run that horse in a 1,000-metre two-year-old maiden at Moonee Valley and kick him off somewhere. Well, I shouldn't say easy, because no two-year-old maiden this time of year is easy. I think they're all full of horses that I've got that are talented and precocious, and I have to always be wary. But the day after that is is one of the lead-ups to the Blue Diamond, and it's a Group 3, so it's also over 1,000 metres, and it's run at Caulfield. He's had that Caulfield experience already, and things didn't quite go to plan with him on debut in the debutante. So I'll give that some more thought and talk to the guys after he's had an easy weekend following the trial, and we'll come up with a bit of a plan there. But I think he's ready to go over 1,000 metres, and he's ready to run well fresh up. He's a very fast colt, that horse. You've got to keep working on his ability to control that speed.
James, we invite our audience to participate via SMS, and 0416 90 50 52 is the number to contribute. And a number of people already have this morning, and you are by far and away the most overwhelming topic at the moment. James Cummings is great for racing, and how he engages with the racing media and its audience. It's first class. Thank you to Ollie for that. And another one that says, how good is it to listen to James Cummings? Is he really Bart's grandson? that was from Paul in the city. Terrific day at the races yesterday for the team, James, and I know you have built a terrific team culture with Vin Cox and everybody that's involved at Godolphin. It's great to see, and it's good for racing in Australia. Thanks for joining us.
No, thanks, Charlie. Before I go, Chris, can I ask you one question? When you do your form, do you ever pull out the stewards' reports from Queensland to have a glance over some things you might have missed on a tape?
Yes, I always look at the stewards' reports. Have I missed something there?
I thought I might have picked up on like a comment from Exhilarate. Because
might have been something.
I thought she might have like got squeezed at the start or something. Anyway, there's no mention of Exhilarate at the start. So Karen's convinced when he talked to me last night after his third champagne, he was telling me about what was happening at the start. But then it struck me that the rider of Yes 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 dropped his whip at the furlong, and I thought that was very, very impressive considering that horse was still in its box when the race was on. It's a good tool, that, the stewards report, but I do feel for the guys. They rush it out every Saturday night after the race. There's bound to be some mistakes there from time to time.
Well, there is a rumour, always has been a rumour, they need to pick up their Chinese meal on the way home. So they need to get out of the course pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And etymology, James, talk was last week when we spoke to you, he was still ticking over and might even head to New South Wales for a staying race in the weeks ahead. What's the plan there?
Yeah, there's a race called the Australia Day Cup. It's run at Warwick Farm this year over a mile and a half, and while he's such an impressive Flemington horse, he's got like a real love affair with the Flemington circuit. Unfortunately, this is just like the right race to keep him up in that staying range that he's just relishing at the moment. So we've already brought him back to Agnes Banks, and he galloped yesterday and gave his rider a great deal. He's still showing all those signs that he's thriving with that peak fitness that he's in right now. So we'll head that way with him, and you'll see him run at Warwick Farm later this month.
Thanks so much for your spending so much time with us and giving us a great update on the team, but in particular, congratulations on the victory of Exhilarate yesterday, James.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's the show done. Chris, we've picked James Cummings' brain, and that's all we got time for.
That's
now,
Gold Coast correspondent.
How good is it to have him involved? And take us through your thoughts on the race yesterday.
Well, they went pretty hard in the race up front. There was a lot of horses that were caught wide. Horses such as High Tail was four deep the trip. Sarsum was behind them wide. Unite and Conquer was off the track. Was always going to be from that particular gate. And the little filly from Rockhampton was the other one that was caught wide. But gee, I mentioned to Jason yesterday on the show, he asked the question, where do you like to be in these sorts of races? And I said, well, you need to be in the first probably four, five, or maximum six. So after 100 metres, when we were back third last with Exhilarates, Should have been worried, but had Kieran McAvoy aboard. And you know when you have a Group 1 jockey such as Kieran McAvoy aboard, you've got to be confident. Even at the top of the straight, the horse was last, waiting for that gap, which came. But when that gap came, gee, she let down, and she really dashed to the line. You always knew she was going to go past them. It was just it was a great ride, a patient ride, an outstanding win, and a terrific race.
Overall, you're obviously our Queensland racing expert. How did the Gold Coast track play yesterday?
I thought it played beautifully, actually. The first winner in the maiden sat outside. The lead just drifted off the fence. We had the staying race, Tumultuous, come through right through along the inside. So I think it played fair. I think it played to tempo. Perfect days, perfect track.
You have any observations on the day overall, Dean?
Oh, just the Kieran McAvoy phenomenon is just building. I mean, that was only a lazy $2 million race. He's been winning $7 and $13 million races. So just add a $2 million race to the mantelpiece. It's just he was just unflappable in the run, really. The 300, when you look at it, still got a bit to do, but he was just letting her balance and build her momentum, and then she let down beautifully.
In terms of the two-year-old performances we've seen this season, where do you think this might sit?
I think it was, I think it's a handy race. I'm sort of waiting for that absolute, elite two-year-old to jump out, and maybe James has got it from earlier in the season. She did a very good job, and her rate of development, and what she will have is she's got plenty of race experience for a young filly. That was her fifth start. So, to press on to a race like the Riesling Slipper Trial, at least she'll have that experience under her belt.
And Kieran Maher and David Eustace getting Dubious up there in good shape. Everything he's done to date's been really tradesman-like and probably better than tradesman-like, very professional. And he has capitalised on, I suppose, just his ability to be able to put himself in the right spot, particularly yesterday, and get that right run and maximise the return for the owners.
No, I think you're spot on saying his first two runs were more tradesman-like. He covered ground in the win at Eagle Farm, but yesterday he really dashed. I thought it was his, in defeat, it was his best run, and he ran absolutely out of his skin.
Comments on Dubious or even Some Behind, Chris?
Well, he was 3 weeks between runs, Dubious, and he was up to 1,200 metres for the first time, so I thought his run was very good. Some of those ones behind, there was a bit of a gap to the also-rans. I think the ones worth following, definitely the winner, definitely second. Hightail, certainly as well, and Tsar's Son, but I'd probably be ruling the line underneath the fourth horse going forward.
And while we're mentioning Dave Eustace and Kieran Maher, just great to see Star Fall pull the right rein and head to Sydney, but also for Linda Meach, Dean, and now that those rules have been amended and dual licence holders can ride in New South Wales, she certainly made the most of those opportunities yesterday with a double.
Yeah, won the first two races and just really great training, because the temptation, it was a big discrepancy in prize money, but they just decided that Sydney from the draw and everything was the best race, and they got a result, and they didn't tempt fate by running from a wide draw and having a tough run.
That's a wrap of the two-year-old Magic Millions Classic.
This podcast is brought to you by rsn.net.au.
Fiery Hopes in the early part of the straight led the way. Hootson is immediately under pressure. Dothraki comes to the outside, then Kaepernick. Fiery Hopes in front, but Dothraki is eating into the margin. Still Fiery Hopes the leader. Fiery Hopes trying to hang on. Look at Egyptian Symbol. Last or first, if you don't mind. Egyptian Symbol descended and won. Beat either Fiery Hopes or Dothraki. Usain Bolt not far away, then Kaepernick.
Well, this is a great example of the longevity of the Magic Millions Carnival for some horses, isn't it, Chris, with Egyptian Symbol, I think, getting there for the third or fourth time and mixed her racing style at times, but gee, she was good the race shaped up yesterday.
Yeah, well, she was suited by that strong speed up front with the likes of Fiery Heights and Hootson running along, and as David Fowler said, she went last to first, and yes, she's a regular visitor to this meeting every year. She seems to run well just about every year, and I'm sure she'll be here for further years to come, but I suppose the flop was Hootson. Very disappointing sitting up outside the lead of Fiery Heights. The Edmonds boys basically just said that she pulled up distressed, and it was the worst career effort she's put in to date. So obviously there's got to be some issue there.
Now, if we take James Cummings' word at face value, we've got to be a little bit cautious of reading the steward's report in Queensland. But it does say that Hootson jumped awkwardly, shifted out and bumped Lacourt en Bleu and inclined to lay out. And Jeff Lloyd stated that the mare not initially show as much early speed as she does. Post-race veterinary examination revealed the mare to have a poor post-race recovery. So maybe just a forgive day. But Dino, you've been talking about Egyptian Symbol at times over the various seasons, and you think that's the best way to ride her, isn't it?
Oh, off the speed? Yeah, it's always been what I've wanted to see. Given up on the faith, I've got to say, and at the big odds yesterday, and probably should have worked it out that with Hootson and those sort of horses involved, it'd be the sort of speed that would suit her. But that's how she's always trialled, back in the field and charged. And she was terrific late yesterday in that race, because it just changed so quickly, Chris, because it looked like Dothraki was grinding it out and nearly going to win, and then all of a sudden the race just changed.
It did. That last 80 metres or so, Egyptian Symbol came from the back. Fiery Heights was very good. Yeah, up on the pace there. I thought fought on very well right to the line.
Yeah. Usain Bolt of the Victorian Interest, he ran well, because these horses are pretty seasoned sprinters, and he was coming off a benchmark race.
Yeah, another line in the stewards report: Jeff Lloyd was fined $400 for failing to weigh out by the required time aboard Hootson. I would have thought at his age he'd get a little bit of leniency for dottering around the jockey's room before he weighs out, Dean.
Yeah, well, yes, Warren. He he'd ridden in the race before. It's just giving him a kicking after getting beaten on a favourite. We'll just give you 400 as well.
An Irish constabulary, I can remember him winning a race, I think, at Yarra Valley going back years
as a 7-year-old maiden.
And he's still ticking around. Another good advertisement, although finishing 8th yesterday, but a good advertisement of what the Magic Millions concept does do to allow horses like that to run for $1 million. But Egyptian Symbol, the first leg of a double for Bjorn Baker. Jason Collard aboard, and very strong finish to take out the Snippets. The sprint race over 1,200 metres. The Fillies and Mares was over 1,300 metres. Manicure was the favourite, and Vincibella was the challenger.
In the straight, 300 left to run. Erythea is trying to up the ante, and Manicure is under pressure but sticking on. Coming between the pair, Magic Alibi. Invincibella now into clear open spaces. Starts to charge over to Manicure, who reached the lead. Manicure in front. Invincibella is laying down the law. Invincibella defends her crown. Invincibella beat Manicure. Photo third, Magic Alibi or Erythea running on Elikazoom.
Well, we got a handle on Invincibella even down here, Chris, and she's been a regular traveller and a regular visitor to the Magic Millions and the second victory in this race. How did it work out yesterday?
Well, it went exactly to plan. The map had Erythea up front, Manicure on the outside, and Invincibella somewhere behind them. That was the query. Where was she going to get? Was she going to be better than Nudefield? Was she going to be just up behind those leaders? Or she probably settled about three or four lengths off them. Just thought on the home turn there, Hugh Bowman was trying to get off the fence, and the run sort of closed for him. He couldn't get to the outside. Patient, as again top jockeys are, he stayed where he was. He waited for something closer, nearer the inside, came through and was too strong late against the tempo of the race. So Manicure had every possible chance. Invincibella was just too classy.
Post-race, Chris Waller just said that she, had the quality, but she needed the good ride to be able to get that clear galloping room. And Dean Hugh Bowman probably just, as Chris outlined, patience at a time where he could have panicked, and then the gap did come later on.
It was certainly a race for those well drawn, but she's a bit of a warrior, Invincibella. She's much travelled, and she's a terrific mare, and another great result prize money wise for her yesterday.
Platinum Angel, visitor from Victoria, a mare we know well. How did you assess her performance, first of all, Chris?
Probably hard, the way the race was run. She's a get-back sort of mare, and the tempo didn't really suit her. So she was only beaten, just under 2.5 lengths on the line. So nothing wrong with that.
Any thoughts on Platinum Angel, Dean?
Thought she was okay, as was Elikazoom. She's run well first up off a break. So both mares acquitted themselves well. There was a few wanting to sort of tip Iron Queen yesterday, and she just wasn't in the race.
In the three-year-old guineas, Star Fall had stayed in Sydney after drawing a wide barrier. The wide barrier was still there for Boom Sara, and for that reason, from a good barrier draw, there was plenty of money for Outback Barbie.
The guineas field approaches the bend with 400 left to run. Can Boom Sara lead all the way? We'll know soon. Flattens in front, Bondi about to issue a challenge. Outback Barbie emerging to third, and then came at the head of the others was Unconditional. Boom Sara in the early part of the straight leads, but Bondi is a real challenger. Outback Barbie's trying to get on terms, and Barefoot's rushing up to the inside. Bondi and Boom Sara. Boom Sara and Bondi. Outback Barbie charging late. Here's the post. Photo! Boom Sara is prominent with Outback Barbie and Bondi. And in the words of Wade Wilson, that was a ding-donger. Photos all around. Barefoot.
How'd you see the ding-donger, Chris?
Oh, I thought it was a real ding-donger too, Warren. It was, well, any of the three could have won in the last 100 metres or so of that race. Outback Barbie needed another, what, 5 metres maximum to run them down, unfortunately.
Metre and a half.
Yeah, exactly. It was heartbreaking. But,
it was.
Boom Sara took a little bit of time to work its way across steadily, not having to do too much work. Tim Clark summed up the situation well and was able to hang on. Bondi, I think, ran out of its skin. It was a very good run. And they did beat the others quite comfortably. So, yeah, that could have gone any one of three ways. Unfortunately, went the wrong way.
Outback Barbie lodged a protest against Bondi, the second-place getter, with Outback Barbie finishing a narrow third. How did you see that incident?
I didn't see much there at all, and I'm not surprised it was dismissed. I saw their head on there, and there didn't seem to be a lot. I just thought Outback Barbie was a little bit flat at the top of the straight. She just didn't pick up that quickly. I don't know why that was, but look, as she really wound up that last 50 or 100 metres of the race, and as I said, she only needed a step or two further.
She's been a little bit frustrating, Dino, but got a high degree of talent. What do you make of Outback Barbie? Does she even want further than yesterday's trip of 1,400?
She could do, but it was a terrific closing effort and a very high-pressure race, 121.13. They've really rocked it along, as they do on this day, but she just missed and... I would think there's a chance that she could certainly, she might be a lightweight Coolmore chance or something, the three-year-old filly. She's a good filly. She's a lot better filly than her strike rate of 2 wins from 11 starts shows, but Chris, it's her racing style that probably prevents her from winning more.
Yeah, exactly. She gets back off the speed. She needs luck in her races, and she's often been the bridesmaid.
And we should not underestimate the performance of Boom Sara, and unfortunate for Damien Brown, who took ill, but... Gee, Timmy Clark, he's one of the best pinch-hitting jockeys in Australia, Dean, isn't he? He just gets when he gets the opportunities or the call-up, he just he fills the boots very well.
Yeah, well, he's he'll probably develop into... I think he's one of the best jockeys going around, but you're right, it's been more than once that he's got the pinch-hitter's role and got the money on the big days.
And a big day for Chris Munce, too, with Boom Sara having that good form and a positive ride from that wide barrier draw, just using the horse's strength and fitness and albeit with perhaps unlucky stories behind, but plenty of merit in the performance of Boom Sara to ride the speed and keep kicking.
Yeah, and for the size, Spirit of Boom and Eureka Stud being involved, it was probably extra special. And as you said, for Chris Munce, a big winner.
What do we take out of this race for the future, Chris? Where might some of these horses end up?
Well, I think once you get past... some of these Melbourne horses, Smart Elysium, etc., we can follow those, obviously, down in Victoria. But Boom Sara will go on, no doubt about that. You'll see Boom Sara, I'm sure, in the Brisbane winter. Outback Barbie, as Dean mentioned, might show up in Sydney during the early part of the autumn carnival there. So I'd follow Boom Sara, I'd follow Outback Barbie, definitely.
Where's Granny Red Shoes at, Philly, that we had a big opinion of in the winter carnival?
Well, we spoke to Toby Edmonds yesterday morning and sort of asked him about the first start run, which he was quite happy with. I don't think she did a great deal yesterday. She probably had her chance. I'd have to go back and have a second, third and fourth look at the replay, but I don't know. She's certainly not racing in the same form she was early last year in Brisbane. She had a couple of runs, as you know, Dean, in Melbourne, and she didn't really fire at all. So maybe she needs another break.
Bjorn Baker already had a win up on the board earlier in the day. He saddled up redouble with Craig Williams aboard in the last.
The Magic Millions Cup field went by the 400 metres and rounded the turn. Arp bites him in the lead from Cruz on the outside, trying to pose a threat. Then Michelle Gustave. Redoubles just behind them, then Sambro. Shogun Sun being called upon, and Cadigan trying to run on after a wide run but starting to peak. They're spread across the track, 100 metres left to go. Redouble got the split in the centre. Arp bites him, tries to go with it. Sambro's getting out late, Cadigan wider, redouble, pulls off a big plunge and beats Sambro. I'd say Shogun some third, bites him or Cadigan for fourth.
Very fluid market through the official prices here, Chris. David Fowler saying pulls off a plunge.
Yep.
$8 into $3.80, but then easing out to start $6. So plenty of movement in that price.
Yeah, there was some good money for this one, redouble, and didn't let the punters down. Drew gate number one and got the split at the right time. Sambro also came through and ran well. There's a horse to follow in this race, guys, and that is Cadogan, who ran fourth.
Oh, gee, he's a good horse.
He's a very good horse. He's got such a turn of foot and nothing went his way yesterday. He was 3 and 4 wide, no cover. And he was still there battling away right on the line. He was only beaten 1.3 as they hit the line. You wonder if they had have gone back to last and ridden him cold, how he would have gone, but gee, he was stiff.
Yeah, he's. I mean, his form leading in was outstanding. Yep. The win at Eagle Farm, he did it all by himself, and he could have done that yesterday and gone very close.
And the form through his lead up was franked with the win of Chapter and Verse earlier in the day too, Dean. So that that form was held up, and Chris, both horses, Chapter and Verse, who we'll talk about shortly, and Cadogan might have bright futures.
Oh, definitely the case. Chapter and Verse has been consistent all the way through, but Cadogan's got that turn of foot.
Can he be a Stradbroke horse, Chris?
Yeah, well, that's what Toby Edmonds mentioned yesterday. They had originally set the horse 12 months ago for this race, so disappointing to have the run they had. And he's looking towards the Stradbroke, obviously, in the wintertime. So that's where they're heading.
A horse we know down here well, Hassan Eagle. Chris, what did you make of his performance?
Just an average performance in a bunched-up sort of finish there, beaten just over three lengths.
Anything about Balsonic and Hassan Eagle horses we know well down here, Dean, that we need to take note of?
I was pretty fixated on Cadogan, Warren, so I can't...
We weren't the only one.
Yeah, so I was just a little bit distracted there.
Earlier in the day, Chris, highlights from the meeting from your perspective. What did we take out of the races leading into the features? Anything particular?
Well, they were pretty low level, some of those earlier races. Obviously, Terminology in the Maiden was the right horse there, coming off a listed placing at Gosford the start prior. Oh, I thought the horse that ran second, Rock, the Team Hawks runner, it drew a horror gate. Gee, it made some good ground late in the straight from a long way back there. So it's probably one to follow. Had it have drawn an Ellie yesterday, he probably would have just about won the race. So Rock certainly is one to follow out of that Maiden. I'd probably be following Reckless Choice out of the Country Cup. A very nice horse who generally takes a run. First up yesterday was only run down late by the Bolter, Mr. Mark Hu. So Reckless Choice looks to have come back well.
Mr. Ackflyer there for the Victorian interest.
Yes. What did you make of that run, Dean?
She wasn't beaten far, as you said. No. Bunch finish. Where does this sort of form sit? Is this just Saturday form or a little bit better? Or?
No, it's only Saturday form,
yep,
really.
Okay.
It's not overly strong. But look, she didn't have things really... the tight track there at the Gold Coast, the wide gate, was always going to be
trying
a task
to get into the race,
That's right. Yeah, that's right. We spoke about Chapter and Verse, who was due for a win, and so was Tumultuous in race four, getting up along the fence there for Robbie Fradd. Had been extremely consistent without winning. It was good to see that one break through yesterday.
What about Sylphie only getting beaten two lengths in that race? It's quite remarkable.
I could not work out why Sylphie was even in the race. 1,200 up to 2,200. She'd only been as far as a mile in the past.
Yeah, it was an owner's call.
Yeah. Mm. It was a strange one, but at the end of the day, the owner wasn't wrong.
Wasn't
really
far wrong.
No.
Yeah, ran enormous.
Desley Forster, an important day for her. You mentioned Chapter and Verse, and there's a strong link to Eureka Stud and the Nolan family too with that horse. And I think it was a bit of an emotional victory for Desley there also. And because with the loss of Basil Nolan recently, that really has hit to the heart of the Queensland breeding industry, and they were so entrenched in racing and breeding in Queensland.
Yeah, they were. There's a lot of tears there yesterday after the win of Chapter and Verse, which was well deserved.
Anything here from this meeting overall, Dean? A horse you want to say that this could go to I think I know where it's going to be. A horse that we could write down for even the Queensland Carnival and really keep an eye on. Is it Cadogan?
Yeah, it's spelled Cadogan, yes.
Trained by Toby Edmonds. Brett Preble was in the
saddle. Keep that name in mind.
Yesterday. Chris?
Yeah, I'm with Dean there. I think Cadogan's the one, but probably the early part of the winter, because once these Sydney horses hit the Stradbrokes and the Doomben 10,000s, they do prove too strong. So whether it's up to that level remains to be seen, but some of those earlier sprints, definitely.
You're going to become even more entrenched in Queensland racing in the time ahead, Chris, because you're actually relocating to the Sunshine State next week, so you'll be even more involved in the Queensland racing.
I certainly hope to be, Warren. Yeah, get around and meet a few people and hopefully some more opportunities up there, but you're really looking forward to the stinking hot weather over the next couple of months.
And how have you seen the comeback of the Eagle Farm track?
It's been great. By all reports, it came through that first meeting a few weeks ago really well. I mean, watching Twitter with interest and the posts that Mick Goody's been putting up, and he's been doing plenty of work on it. There's no divots or anything that flying around. They had some track work there for the Magic Millions horses earlier in the week, last week, and all systems go for a meeting there in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for your help, Chris, and look forward to your continued involvement, albeit from a little bit further afar. We'll have to fly you down for the Stradbroke meeting review.
I look forward to that. Thanks, guys.
Chris Nelson there from Best Bets, been terrific in the lead up to Magic Millions Day and obviously in the wrap as well.
The Dollar followed by Turn It Around and Cool Chap towards the fence. Mr. Moneybags trying to get into the clear and Illustrious Lad out wider. It's Holbein at the 300 metres from Takedown looming ominously. Manolo Blahnik and Illustrious Lad down the outside. It's Holbein is just in front of Takedown and Manolo Blahnik. It's a three-way go of the 100. Holbein and Manolo Blahnik. Manolo Blahnik gets its bib in front. And Manolo Blahnik won the Chester Manifold. Three-quarters of a length to a photo Takedown or Holbein. Mr. Moneybags prominent before.
Tough performance, and a proud trainer, Tony Noonan, was there to cheer home Manolo Blahnik yesterday, and he joins us this morning after the victory in the Chester Manifold. Good morning, Tony.
Morning, Warren.
Good performance from the horse yesterday. How did you see it?
You always tend to, when they're your own, you tend to get a little bit excited about it all, but I thought his effort was really good, and my concern going into it is, I said in the press that stepping up to the 14 this time round, I just thought he was a little bit vulnerable from that gate if he was having to be trapped wide. So you could imagine after going a furlong, I was a bit concerned. But as the race progressed and I could see him settle as well as he did, you know, I gained a little bit of confidence. But I was still going to be, a reasonable task to win. But no, it was a good effort.
What was the feedback from Dwayne post-race?
Well, I think he was, we were... Our plan leading into it was to try to get some cover early. So he was fully aware of the fact that, he was in not the preferred position. I said yesterday, post-race report, that, that's the beauty about experience. It's hard to buy that when plan B is that you're going to be stuck out there. And, he just made sure that he got the horse into a rhythm, got him well settled. Even when he was pushed out on the corner, he didn't panic and want to try to find a length quickly. He just let him work into it all the way up the straight. So he was aware of what he had underneath him, and that's a big help.
Tony, was it a sort of deliberate plan to have him sort of getting ready to peak for, say, a race like yesterday and then the Sir John Dillon in a couple of weeks at Caulfield, the stakes races at 1,400 metres, which seems to be a great distance for him?
Yeah, I think so, Dean. Yeah, look, we made a decision. He raced at the back end of the winter. He doesn't handle wet tracks, so I just felt the preparation before, he just lacked a bit of toughness. Even though his form was good, he just wasn't getting to where I thought he had the ability to, and we needed to really just toughen him up. So we took him on the road, basically, to do that, get him away on his own and just get him to season up a bit more. And with that, then, we made the decision that we just felt he was probably just a little bit short of that spring competition, and you can waste a lot of time and money trying to be competitive at that time of the year running nice fifths and sixths and don't get the cash. So we thought, I'd had horses over the years at this time of the year that weren't probably really top of the tree, but you could win some good money if you just held on in that early autumn stage. So yeah, we did target yesterday and then the next run and even the mile run after that, if we can keep him up to the 14, and then we'll have a crack at the mile.
That was going to be my question. As a younger horse, he was that flashing run-on sprinting type horse, but now that he's more mature and feedback from yourself and Dwayne, do you think 1,600 metres is within his scope?
I think so. I think it's worthwhile stepping him out for that trip. I think ultimately, if he threw well yesterday, we would have set up in the first two or three. I think he's got... without brilliant speed from the gate, because we spent a lot of time trying to get him to come back and relax a little bit more. And he does that now. His first movement out of the gate is to put his head down. So I just think when he gets to that trip, he can sit forward. And I think he's got a... I don't think he's got a brilliant turn of foot, but I think he can sustain a good gallop for a long period of time. I think he's got a good set of lungs. So he can... he's able to be there and maintain it. A certain amount of pressure, which will, win him a few races.
Your runner for the day down at Sale is Steel of Madrid, who's second up and dropping a little bit in grade. It race 8, number 1 at Sale this afternoon. What's the expectation there?
Yeah, I think, he's in his right race. His first up run wasn't a bad run. It probably didn't look as good as on paper, but, he went into that a little bit light. So he used it and... yeah, that's tightened him up a little bit. He's had a little jump out at Sandown on Tuesday leading to this. So he goes into this race much better prepared as far as a fitness level. So in that gate, I would expect him to be very hard to beat.
heading to Sale with a bit of momentum following the victory of Manolo Blahnik yesterday. Good luck, Tony. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Warren.
Dino, Tony outlined there the plan to hopefully sit 1-1, but that's what you need with the experienced riders or any rider you leg up, is to be able to adapt to that plan B and perhaps just get the horse into a nice rhythm, even though that he's covering a bit of ground?
Yeah, he was covering a bit of ground, but with how the wind was yesterday, it was a headwind in the straight, so on the circle, it was hitting those closest to the rail, and it was pretty evident that three wide train was a pretty good place to be yesterday through the day, especially we mentioned it in the half-time report on air, that there was nothing wrong with just blending into the race, and his wide draw was actually going to be not a disadvantage. And as Tony mentioned, once he settled three wide, but without cover, but without he was relaxing well, he was going to be very hard to beat, and ultimately he was able to run down Holbein, who was very good, and takedown was a terrific run second up. He ran well first up in Adelaide. And
he's a monster horse.
He's probably the biggest horse I've seen in a long, long time, and he was very brave to the line in running third.
This race can be a lead up to the John Dillon, as you mentioned, at Caulfield in a couple of weeks' time. What do we take out of some of the performances here that might head to that race?
Yeah, well, different dynamic, of course, at Caulfield, but Manolo Blahnik more than comfortable there, and Holbein the same, and I think he'll probably go that way, you'd think. Take down whether Caulfield would really suit him. Mr. Moneybags ran well. He just wanted to lay in at a crucial stage of the race.
Does feature in the Stewards report. He was at a disadvantage, Martin Seidel, wasn't he? He had the whip in the left hand and trying to pull the horse out on one rein. He wasn't really able to get at him for a while there.
Yeah, well, originally he was sort of following Manolo Blahnik and ended up inside his heels because the horse wanted to lay in. And, I think he'd been on the outside of Manolo Blahnik, he'd been a lot more effective, but that was more the horses doing as much as anything. Illustrious Lad, I thought when he first loomed, he was going to be a real chance. I think 1400 might have just seen him out. His stablemate, Call Me Handsome, was a hard day to lead because of that wind factor, and he's not known as a leader. And
He did play up pre-race, didn't he?
He did. Yeah, he played up in the barriers. And I thought Rock and Gold ran pretty well. He was angling for runs to the inside, didn't get them, and then just worked home pretty much under his own steam late in the race. He wasn't really tested, and he's going quite well. This was a lot higher pressure race than his previous two runs where he'd run very well, but he actually showed that he's going well, and Cool Chap was another one that was in that bit of a scrimmage at about the 300 and not getting clear running.
Caviezel de Barker just seemed to be a little bit untractable, and it does feature in the Stewards report, and Stephen Bastow even saying that he did not appreciate racing in the Melbourne direction. How did you mark his performance?
Yeah, I think about the 1,000-metre mark, he wanted to go back to Sydney. He just wanted to do a U-turn. He certainly got tightened, and that featured in the Stewards' report, but was a bit of his own doing as well. So.
That note in the Stewards' report, yep. The suspension from the meeting, the only suspension is Jason Maskeel, and did cause some tightening to Caviezel de Barker aboard Call Me Handsome when he was crossing the field.
Yeah, and he probably had him a little bit tight, but at the same time, the other horse was probably laying out a little bit. Unfortunately, couldn't see the Stewards film of that activity, but trying to get a handle on it, he probably just wasn't two lengths clear, and that's why the suspensions happened.
You referenced that head-on wind and that maybe impacting on the horses nearer the inside when they're on the circle. Other comments on overall how you think Flemington played yesterday?
Yeah, the surface is absolutely perfect. We saw that race one, inside and outside, not much between them. The jockeys gravitated to the outside later in the day, but we saw I'm Someone, probably superior horse, but he wasn't right out wide. So I think both the straight and the circle, the actual surface played well, but I think when you're doing your form, just be a little bit forgiving of those that were on the fence, because they might have been just getting buffeted around by that wind, because it was, in parts of the day, Warren, it was very strong.
It did gust at times, didn't it? And I suppose you're right, if it's up in the high end and you're running into it, then those horses are going to be experiencing a lot more than perhaps horses that have either got cover or later on or different times of the day when the wind's not that strong.
Yeah, exactly right. So, no, just keep that in mind with your form. It certainly wasn't a surface issue, but it was more of a hard day to pace that breeze or be on the inside getting it buffeted around.
The Chester Manifold Stakes was the second leg of a winning double for Dwayne Dunn yesterday. Tony Noonan, the trainer, Manolo Blahnik, the winning horse.
Over on the near side of the 350, it's Microphone held together by a length to Oxford, and they drop away. Piscean and Seven Rays. Over on the far side, Pretty Brazen's going pretty well at the clock tower. It's Pretty Brazen the inside, Microphone and Oxen under the arches. It's Pretty Brazen over here. Over on the far side, just in front, Pretty Brazen coming out at Microphone.
Well, the rail's out six, and this is tight. Microphone's right in this. It's a photo finish between the two favourites, Pretty Brazen or Microphone, then Platini or Oxen for third.
It was very tight, and it was almost deceptive, Dean, watching it live and then watching the replay on the big screen. It was hard to pick until the photo went up.
Yes, and even for the participants, I didn't speak to Dwayne Dunn about it, but Luke Curry was pretty confident he'd won. He thought he'd done enough to win, and it was a terrific race. I think it'll be an okay two-year-old race too. I think those three were pretty good. Even Platini was chasing from a long way out and chased hard, and that late sectional was, I think, pretty good. So going forward, I think this is a pretty useful race.
We'd seen Microphone at the jump outs with the blinkers on and show that sharpness. How did that performance yesterday line up with your expectation?
Yeah, look, I thought he was pretty good. The sort of the X factor was Oxen, because it wasn't tested to the level that Microphone was at the trials the week before. And as James Cummings mentioned earlier, that there wasn't going to be like three lengths between them like there was, say, time-wise at the trials. But he got a lot closer. He's going to be better over further. And I think the filly of Tony McAvoy's goes very well, Pretty Brazen. She was really good, because she had to do it all on her own down the inside, and she has all but won.
And for that reason too, Microphone was pretty much doing it all on his own, but Dwayne Dunn knew where he wanted to be on the track, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and as we mentioned, the horse trialled there 8 days ago, and he probably went down a pretty similar path to where he was yesterday, and for that reason, for that extent, Oxen was also very much on his own in the jump out, wasn't he, Warren? And he was down the outside where he went yesterday as well.
Yeah, he was the widest runner in his heat and trucking up without really being asked to do anything. Just in terms of their physicality, Microphone looks more like a sharp, perhaps sprinting type, whereas Oxen might even stretch out over slightly more ground.
Yeah, and as James mentioned earlier, that he's got a little bit to come, Microphone. Not so much, I wouldn't have thought, in fitness, just his coat and just a little bit more to really refine. And Oxen's quite a good, imposing style of two-year-old that's, I'm sure, going to get over further. And I love the attitude of Pretty Brazen in the pre-race. She was just so relaxed and just took it all in. And, that's going to take her a long way. I wouldn't be surprised if she went to the Blue Diamond Preview in a couple of weeks at Caulfield and ran very well.
They're the Saturday of the Australia Day long weekend. So we're starting to get to the time where the good two-year-olds, the potential two-year-olds, obviously we've seen the performance of Brooklyn Hustle and the form through that race hold up, but the other teams are probably starting to present their horses like the Godolphin Operation and Tony McAvoy, who's got such a strong group of two-year-olds and has targeted that the last few seasons.
Yeah, exactly. So, it really starts to heat up. But a filly like Pretty Brazen with that race fitness, that would take her a long way in 2 weeks' time. And I think she won't be far away. And as I said, I think Platini's a filly that I was sort of, her trial was okay, I thought, and she was well enough found in the market yesterday, and she ran right to that and chased really well, and I think there's improvement in her as well.
It was the performance of Microphone winning the first. Dwayne Dunn, who's doing a bit of work with the Godolphin Operation and had been involved in the trials with Microphone going into that debut victory. Bold Ariel, Damien Lane and Kieran Maher and Dave Eustace combining in the second.
As they reach the 400 metres stretched across the track, it's Bold Ariel and JJ Dar over towards the near side just in front. Sweet Jazz over towards the middle of the track is running on, followed by Melveen Under the Whip and Angel Lass. Sweet Jazz and also Bold Ariel together at the clock tower, then JJ Dar. It is Sweet Jazz and Bold Ariel. Bold Ariel and Sweet Jazz stride for stride inside the 50. Bold Ariel goes home better, and Bold Ariel won by a length. Sweet Jazz, JJ Dar third, four lengths VV Valentina.
Well, the Maher and Eustace team are off to a flying start in Sydney, Dean, with the win of Starfall, and Bold Ariel took that victory from a more modest race, I suppose, up in grade. But she looked good yesterday. How did you see it?
Yeah, I think you look at her form, those two runs at Moonee Valley, and you say 5th of 10, 6th of the 7, maybe a bit disappointing. But she was missing the start and getting on straight on the back foot. They put the barrier blanket on her at Echuca. She stepped cleanly and she won. And yesterday she began cleanly, put herself in the race. So just so important to be able to get that clean start in a sprint race, especially, and put herself in the race, and she was in the right lane. Everything went you know, perfectly for her. I thought Sweet Jazz was terrific. Back to the inside, where she was always going to have to be. I think Clayton Douglas had a little bit of a look at about the 800-metre mark to try and get away, maybe across the heels of Vivi Valentina, but no sooner that he was sort of edging that way, Melvine had taken that spot, so then he had to go back to the inside, and he wasn't with the momentum horses, so I thought her run was exceptional for a second race start as well.
Dwayne Dunn didn't like the action or the feeling of Benito post-race, and she had a slow recovery and was lame in the off-hind, so we certainly didn't see the best of Benito yesterday.
No, the market expected her to run very well, and she was the one that, most of the horses that were in the betting ran well, and she was the one, the exception. I thought JJ Dar was good. She was very much, she was off the bit very early in the race, and I just think looking for a little bit further now, or after that bad experience at Moonee Valley, maybe blinkers, but her closing effort was quite good.
I was of the opinion going into the race that maybe with a straight race she wouldn't be that far away and she'd be just almost coiled up behind them, be able to use that turn of foot. But yeah, she was just a bit dour or just took a while to build that momentum yesterday, didn't she?
She did. But again, her closing effort was quite good. And Vivi Valentina, back in distance, blinkers on. She was a bit keen early, but she might be getting to the back end of it. They ran away from her and she's been better than that in her previous runs.
Looking ahead, is there anything that stands out from this race that you'd be keen to keep an eye on for something in the future?
Look, long as they stay to this sort of level, these fillies are going to be highly competitive, but it's not too long and then you get the flick over to the stakes racing like the Kevin Hayes Stakes and that would be a different level again.
Darren Weir had been patient in trying to pick the right race for Salence, who was scratched from a couple of races last weekend. He lined up over 1,600 metres in the third yesterday.
So Sosie Bond quickens up at the 350, given a reminder. Torgerson getting a bit closer. Silence the inside. Guizzo presents, and they've got right away from Ullman. Sosie Bond kicks for home at the 250. Silence getting out now from Guizzo Torgerson. Sosie Bond at the 150. Silence moves up, though. Silence up to Sosie Bond, then Guizzo. Silence is clear. Forging away, Silence, three-quarters, Sosie Bond, and it's Silence. Silence by a length, Sosie Bond, Guizzo third, Torgerson fourth.
Well, going into the race, Dean, perhaps the tempo of the race was going to be the query. How did it end up unfolding?
Well, not too bad. I mean, Sosie Bond rolled along at a below average speed, but they strung a little bit and he rolled them along. Torgerson sitting outside him, Guizzo right behind Torgerson, and Silence ended up fourth the fence, where he's pretty much guaranteed he was going to be. It was just then a matter of him getting the runs at the right time, and they certainly appeared on straightening. He was able to angle between Sosie Bond and Torgerson when Sosie Bond kicked, and it was a lovely execution of the ride, and he's just a good winning horse, Silence, and I don't think his winnings finished yet, because he got round on the minimum here. He won't get a huge penalty for that, and he can win again.
The run almost, it looked like there might have even been a run to the inside of Sosie Bond at a time in the straight, but you could see Dean Yendall very keen to just be patient and angle out, knowing that the horse would sprint, and probably a higher percentage play to look for that run to the outside rather than a neat run inside.
Absolutely, but he, you're right, he did have a couple of options and played the percentage and waited for Torgerson to just drop off that little bit, and he did, and he won well. I thought Guizzo ran well. I like Guizzo maybe a pair further back and in a higher pressure race, but he's racing very well, and coming off that cup win at Warrnambool, he's held his form pretty nicely, and Ullman made ground late, but I see he got a mention in the stewards report, Warren.
Slow recovery and was suffering from heat stress, so a forgive for Ullman, who was probably the race did have sort of an A set and a B set in terms of the market, and he was the one that was in the A set that probably raced below expectations, but maybe with an excuse.
Yeah, and he sat in that second group too. The race did have a bit of a divide, and he was first home of that second group, and the horses in the market were well on the pace and the run, and so it proved.
And no knock on the performance of Sosie Bond. He'd been a well-documented non-winner, I suppose, for a period of time, and back in the winner's stall last start, but he rode the speed, and he certainly didn't shirk the task.
Yeah, I think you can just take him on face value that he's in open grade, he's going to run well. He's pretty much done that, and he's done it in a different sort of manner leading yesterday and on pace when he won, but he gets in a high-pressure race, he can sit a little bit further back and he'll run well. He's, I think we've got to draw a bit of a line in him, his form, and say, look, he's become a fairly genuine gelding in that he'll run pretty well most times.
So this form lined up through the Lord Stakes, which wasn't an epic edition of the Lord Stakes, and Salenza's been able to win. You reference that he's not going to get too harshly treated at the handicaps. What would you like to see him progress towards?
Oh, I think just through these open handicaps at this time of year, there's no, you know, if there was a really rich country cup or something, he'd be ideally suited, but just a good mile race, he'll be competitive.
It was the nominate now for the All-Star Mile. You're not really heading that direction, are we?
Well, no, I think it'll be fascinating who gets votes in the All-Star Mile, and I don't know if Silence will get a few. He's got a few owners, but it'll be interesting to see how that, I think that voting opens January 21.
I think it closes in the next few days, might even close Tuesday. So let's hope Sosie Bond's in the nominations, because he might get a few people's votes.
Yeah, well, that's right. The nominations close Tuesday, I think, then the votes open 21st of Jan. So, that concept will certainly keep getting promoted in the next few weeks, and rightly so, it'll be different.
Salence taking out the nominate now for the All-Star Mile Handicap Race 3. Damien Oliver used all his skill and guile to get O'Torto over the line in Race 4.
Happily to be at the 300 metres. Symphonette still three-quarters of a length away, and Lane hasn't moved. Two further back to Blinder, and O'Torto is now starting to come on. Symphonette at the clock tower goes for home. The filly pins the ears back, puts up two lengths. Now Blinder's running on with O'Torto Magnusiva. Symphonette 100 to go, needs the line. O'Torto's coming at it. Now O'Torto over the top, it will get up. It was ugly, but it got up. O'Torto from Symphonette or Blinder, followed by Magnusiva.
It was an ugly watch, Dean, but he was in front once, and it was when it counted.
It was it was remarkable that he won, really. And I just think that not that many riders would have got him home. Damien Oliver's just got that knack. I mentioned it yesterday that some of those horses that need a lift or a coaxing somehow, and he was the first off the bit and going nowhere at the 400 metre mark. He was going to run about fifth, but somehow found a way to win.
And it was a mixture of hands and heels, and then one with the persuader, and then just
cross rein him. Yeah, all sorts of all the little tricks to just encourage him to get to the line.
And I think they started almost when the barriers opened. I don't think Ollie had a moment's rest in that race, just trying to think his way through how to coax the horse over the line.
Well, he missed the start, and then he over-raced. So the first part of the race didn't go that well. He probably thought he was, he looked as though he was well-positioned to maybe be 1-1, but that didn't eventuate. And from there, he had to go to a plan B, a plan C, when the horse didn't respond. And, the last little bit, he just threw him to the line and, got him over the line. And it was hands and heels the last 50 metres, so no, terrific race.
What do we take out of the runs behind?
I thought Symphonette was really good. I was sort of, she was stepping up in trip, and she'd come off a really high pressure 1200 metre race at the Valley where they just went too hard, those fillies. So probably a totally different dynamic yesterday, where she could get up outside the lead, and they went through the middle sections, 11.92, I think 12 seconds from the 800 to the 600, and they just went along at a nice even speed, and she rode that speed and was very good. Blinder was really good, deep into a preparation. He was vetted behind the start after playing up in the barriers. He was three wide in the run. As I said, I don't think that was as big a penalty as some days, because he certainly had the cover from the inside two horses, but he really seemed to lift as well when O'Torto came to him, Oren, because he was labouring, and yet he sort of responded late as well.
He was there to surge late, wasn't he? And horses that were riding the speed were probably entitled to get that little bit tired. You referenced the Winder filly I've got a small share in, Happily to Be. She was coming off a maiden victory at Seymour, and she got tired the last couple of hundred metres, but under the circumstances up in grade, she's probably ran as well as she could.
Yeah, I think so. Magnusiva wasn't too bad, didn't get a lot of room late, and I thought Banger just closed off okay, and maybe the curtain drawing on Kaplumpich's preparation. He was back to 1200 last week, and forgivable because he was a bit one-paced. I just don't think he had the pick-up like we've seen the best of him sort of six weeks ago.
No, and he'd had that already drop back from 14 to 1200 metres earlier in the campaign too, so he's been busy. We know Weary can and prolong the campaigns of horses, but there's probably an indication that he's done enough for now, and he's a horse that Connections are going to have some fun with.
Oh, for sure, and he's probably like a silver bowl horse in the winter. Wouldn't mind seeing Banger in about a 64 grade. I think he'd go pretty close in that sort of grade for 3-year-olds.
What about O'Torto? He's early enough in his campaign. Where might he go?
Yeah, I don't No, I mean, they're well catered for in these benchmark races. You know, he was well up in the weights in a 70. He's probably going to go to a 78 now and probably even go further the way he went yesterday. But, yeah, he's a lightly raced horse that's yet to run a poor race, so you've got to take that on face value. Four starts, two wins, two placings.
Damien Oliver, the first leg of a double aboard O'Torto yesterday, using all his skill to get O'Torto over the line.
Around the turn at the 500, Mascolino gives Age of Fire the stare, and it's Mascolino the outside with Zach Spain, who hasn't flinched. Beauty Way to the outside, running on from Snowano, and then came Tarquin from second bullet. So it's Mascolino. It likes a fight, and at the 300 metres, it's got one. Age of Fire keeps kicking Beauty Way, and Tarquin is running on as well. Mascolino joined in the centre by Tarquin from Beauty Way, and second bullet the outside. It's Tarquin at the 100. Here comes second bullet. It's Tarquin and Nick. Second bullet the outside. Ollie lifts another one over the line to win it. Second bullet from Tarquin. Three lengths Beauty Way Mascolino.
Well, Matty Hill calling very well, Dino. Mascolino likes a fight. As soon as Matty Hill said that, Mascolino turned it up.
The white towel came out very quickly. He sort of really interesting comments post-race on racing.com from Zach Spain in an interview as a beaten favourite jockey that, really good observation is that he said he's just a better soft track horse. He just doesn't quite let down as good on the better ground. And as punters, you look at his form and, yeah, he's won three races on good ground, but he's won three of six on soft ground and he made his name last winter, and that win at Flemington back in December was on soft five, so he might be just right on the coin there, and because he just didn't quite let down. He was the winner at the 300, and as we mentioned, no sooner he went for him that there was nothing there.
Stewart's report just says that Mascolino was slow to begin, and he did take a while to get that spot up outside the leader, but I don't think there was any early effort there that took its toll late.
No, not at all, and he went at a speed. I mean, Age of Fire just rolled them along at really even sections all the way. He was going just over 12s, and I think Mascolino can cope with that okay, but ultimately there was nothing in the finish. But again, Damien Oliver just tracking from back in the field on second bullet. He just kept just niggling him just to keep him interested and on the bit. And I think this is just great training by Danny O'Brien. This older horse, he's a good horse fresh. There's no point sort of, just going every 8 weeks or so. He's just running him once a month, and they're getting good results out of him. And it'll be harder for him now because he is at his best when he's down the weight. So 54.5 was a good weight for him yesterday, and he was magnificently ridden, I thought.
Tarquin, a former Godolphin horse for Simon Ryan, how did you assess his run?
Yeah, blinkers on, and I thought when he burst through the pack, he was the winner, and he couldn't have done much more for him in the run. Fred Kersley, I thought he gave him a sensational ride, and he just wasn't quite good enough to hold off second bullet, but a really encouraging run for them, and they're going to get a result out of him soon enough.
Another example of how Ollie is able to get the best out of horses, and a good association he's got with second bullet, getting that victory yesterday. Race 6 was over 1,400 metres. The mares were set to battle.
Up around the turn, Sister Kitty Mac and Amortensia set to sparkle. Black Sleeves and Cap out wider. Twitchy Frank looks for a run behind them. Nantali's four deep. Remember, the name is right behind those horses. Flying Corrupt to the outside from Jester Halo. In the straight at the 300 metres, it's Amortensia getting her nose in front from Set to Sparkle. Nantali, Twitchy Frank behind those horses. Then Remember the Name and Jester's Halo. As they reach the 200 metres, Set to Sparkle moves up to Amortensia and claims, and then Nantali. Set to Sparkle from Amortensia. Nantali, Set to Sparkle going well. Punched out by Curry, and Set to Sparkle beat Nantali. Amortensia fourth, Remember the Name.
Gee, I thought this was a good ride. Dean, what did you think?
Yes. I'm on the voting panel for the Roy Higgins medal, and spoiler alert, there's the five votes. Barrier 11, 1-1, Nantali barrier 5, end up 3 wide outside because he was a bit keen, and then Luke just popped out and made her go 4 wide. So, it was the ride that won the race.
Damien Lane had a look at the stewards' footage because you could see at the turn into the home straight. And I suppose in some way Damien Lane's entitled to hold his line, and Luke just said, well, you're not holding me in this pocket, and he just, in good competitive riding, I suppose, just took Damien off that path slightly, and that gave clear galloping room to Set to Sparkle.
Absolutely, put her into the race and put one of his main rivals just that pair wider, and she was just a bit keen, Nantali. She just didn't relax into a rhythm at any stage of the race. So for her to run second, I thought she ran really well.
Stewart's report just indicates that, as I said, Damien Lane did have a look at the footage, and the margin of 3/4 of a length, perhaps, although, you know, the often used line of had the length of the home straight to get past, but if the margin was a nose, maybe the stewards might have had a case to consider, given that Luke did shift out and cause some interference for Nantali?
Yeah, I think probably Damien Lane looked at it out of frustration, really. But it would have had to have been a very, very close margin, I think. And you know, she's run well, Nantali. She just needs to switch off a bit in the middle stages as opposed to yesterday. Amatencia went for home and looked a good chance. I thought she ran well. Remember the name. Speaking with Damien Oliver after the race, he said that first up she was in that really high-pressure race at Caulfield and too close to the speed, and just sapped her freshness yesterday and raced a bit one pace, but looking for the mile. It was a good run for a mile. Twitchy Frank might be a better horse outside the lead in saying that she just grounded out. And I thought Jester Halo's return was terrific because the draw did her no favours. She ran second in this race last year and then won at Caulfield on the Australia Day weekend. If she draws a gate in the mare's race in the next couple of weeks, she's going to go very close because her run was terrific.
You've talked about horses perhaps riding the speed and being a bit forgiving, and maybe Sister Kitty Max a little bit of a query at that trip anyway, but would she be one that you just wouldn't assess properly on yesterday's performance, given that she may have been working into the breeze?
Yeah, a little bit, and I've just got massive doubts on her at 1,400 metres. You know, she's a really good competitive mare at 1,200, but I just think it's a bridge too far for her in this grade. She's got a little bit of 1,400 form earlier in her career and weaker grade, but I just think she finds it a bit tough here.
Chauffeur had been a highly regarded juvenile. He's now with the Darren Weir stable, and he was resuming in race 7 at Flemington yesterday.
So they reached the 350. It's Sam's Image over on the far side. I'm Wesley down the outside with Princeton Spirit, Stella Collision. They were followed by Chauffeur, and behind those, Invincible L, Order of Command, trying to work into it as they reach the 150. It's Chauffeur under the arches, is descending on them. Prezzato late. Chauffeur goes to the lead, and Chauffeur, comprehensive. Chauffeur one at a length and 3/4. Invincible L or Prezzato, followed by a photo, Sam's Image and Stella Collision.
Probably more on the fresh side than resuming, Dino, but gee, he appeared to relish racing down the straight yesterday.
Yeah, he was really good. I was glad I was warned pre-race that he'd be the pick of them in the yard. He's a beautiful horse.
He looked terrific, didn't he?
He looked outstanding, and he trialled up, I thought, pretty well at Terang. He was in very limited room there for a trial, and yesterday he got down the outside, and he really wanted to run, and he savaged the line there. It was, I thought, a very, very good win first up. He's only won one race before, but that will do him a lot of good. And, the Weir Magic at the Warrnambool Waters is working again.
Order of Command probably wasn't in the right part of the race, but Damien Oliver reporting that he was a bit disappointing up in class today and a post-race veterinary examination. No abnormality, but a graze to the right forenee. But you know, effectively, Order of Command just didn't, to me, seem to let down as he has done previously. How did you see it?
Yeah, and that's the thing. He's gone benchmark 80, benchmark 84 his last two runs, and he may not have been quite at his best, but it was another level again with good, tough, experienced horses. And you know, he was first on the back of Rocket Tommy and then on the back of Eastwood, and they sort of didn't take him anywhere. But when he did get clear air for about 100 metres, he didn't zing like he did last time, and then probably not tested really late, Warren. The last 100, Damien went back to hands and heels and very light riding, but yeah, the race had passed him by.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, and Chauffeur was really savaging the lot. Not easy to come from behind Invincible Al and run home quicker than him the last 600 or 400 metres, so there's merit in the performance of Chauffeur, and Invincible Al did what he always does in closing off well and running well down the straight.
Yeah, he did, and I thought Prezzato ran well, put a lie to that run where he didn't have a lot of luck. I was expecting probably at the 300 I'm Wesley was going to be in the top three. I thought he was there and he maybe just grounded out coming back in trip, and I thought he presented really well yesterday and he ran okay. Princeton Spirit I think will benefit from the run. Stellar Collision I thought peaked on his run. I don't think it'll be a bad form race. Sam's Image back around a turn might be one to follow as well. I thought he ran a good race closer to the inside, so I don't think there'll be much wrong with this form, and for open sprints going forward there'll be some winners.
Is that the sort of thing that you'd see Chauffeur just try and pick his way through the open and sprints, get, you know, and just sort of get up in the weights and get his rating up a little bit?
Yeah, it'll be an interesting sort of path with him because I'm sure they're wanting to do something, you know, pretty good with him. You know, he was, I think, a $1.6 million yearling from memory, and you know, there's still that opportunity to really give him a good CV and, you know, and maybe a stud career later on. So whether, you know, we see him a bit down the straight trying to win some of the better races in time.
Chauffeur taking out the Paddock Bar Plate over 1,100 metres, first run for the Weir Stable. Manolo Blahnik took out the Chester Manifold, and I Am Someone carried the hopes of a lot of punters in the last down the straight over 1,100.
Followed by Tycoon Tony, Haybell and Buckler. Sir Callahad down the outside with Was and Me, and Vane Stream's hard up against the outside fence and is running on two. I Am Someone as they reach the 250 in front. Two lengths in front of Run Sati, Vane Stream the outside, and then came Haybell. It's I Am Someone with 100 metres to go. I Am Someone still three lengths in front from a wall chasing. But I Am Someone's going to canter in. I Am Someone won easily. Got the moves up for second. Wasn't Me, Vane Stream. Followed then by...
Fred Kersley knew where he wanted to be on this horse and had the speed to be able to get there, Dean.
Yeah, I think probably even ideally he wanted to get wider, but gee, this horse had so much on this field. He was so impressive. Much better than benchmark 70 grade. I'm not saying he'll go to huge heights, but he was a lot better than this field yesterday. He had to do it virtually all on his own without anything to take him along, and he just kept going. It was a really comprehensive win.
Good ride from Stephen Bastard aboard. Got the moves too. Two horses from relatively inside draws getting to the part of the track where they wanted to be.
Yeah, and, you know, look, he's a very handy horse too. Got the moves, and he... had the, I think, a heart arrhythmia or something at his last run at Pakenham. He trolled so well, you thought that he'd put in a pretty good run. And as you said, Steve took a fair while to edge himself out, but he knew where he wanted to be, and he got home really well and ran well. Wasn't Me's going really well for Dan Williams. He got that confidence-boosting win at Mornington. He was on a quick backup there, so he's had a freshen up and run well. And I thought Vane Stream was the real loomer at about the 200-metre mark down the outside and just peaked on his running, and that's what he's done his last couple. He's just not quite hitting the mark, I think. We know Vane Stream can. Like, the best of him was placed behind Sam's Image Nature Strip in a Vobis Gold race, but just didn't quite that last 100 finish off.
This was the benchmark 70 on the card. We've talked about Order of Command going up in grade to higher races. Where, albeit an impressive winner in benchmark 70 grade, where do you think I Am Someone can progress to?
Well, he was above the 60 kilo threshold of the 70 grade, so he was over that this handicap. He can go to a 78 and win, I would think, no problems, and then build from there. But he's going to be an open class sprinter in time. He proved that with the form through Nature Strip as a 3-year-old. He's a very handy horse, and yesterday was a real display of that.
And a good performance from Fred Kersley aboard, and Stephen Bastard also got the moves. I Am Someone taking out the last at Flemington.
This podcast is brought to you by rsn.net.au.
Dean, it'd be remiss of me if I didn't mention that Phil from Dubbo's chimed in via the SMS. Morning to you, Phil. Warren and Dean, you would have seen some track specialists in your time. Captivated points record at Albany. Phil can cast his net wide. Is 11 starts for 7 wins, 2 seconds and a third. On other tracks, it's 18 starts for 1 win, 2 seconds and 1 third. He won twice this week on Sunday and Friday night, the latter with 61 kilos. Well, we certainly know Phil keeps his eye on racing right around Australia, Dean.
Yes, I hadn't, very remiss of me really not to keep up with that track record of Captivated.
Well, you're our Perth correspondent.
Yeah, well, that's true. And you always gravitate to Chief De Beers as the biggest track specialist we've ever seen, but Captivated's building a similar record.
Captivated point for Phil Dubbo. Phil from Dubbo. Good on you, Phil. Thanks for joining us. And Dino, let's summarise the day's racing yesterday from a horse to follow and a run of the day point of view.
Yeah, I'll stick to Flemington. I thought Chauffeur's win was really good, and I just think he might build off that, and it just might be a typical Weir horse that'll just keep improving, and I thought he was the run of the day. And the horse to follow, I think in the right race, a horse called Banger for Craig Whittison. He places his horses really well, Craig. I think his run was pretty good yesterday, and if he's in the right race, 64, 70 grade in the next few weeks, he can be winning.
Could even be at Albury or Wagga or somewhere. You'll
Could
have to scour
anywhere.
The form guide, but put it in your black book,
Phil,
Banger.
Phil from Dubbo, please keep an eye on it for us, can you?
And look, I'm going to default to the winner of the Magic Millions 2-year-old classic. I thought Exhilarates was just that yesterday, exhilarating. She was terrific, and I think there could be a race for Pretty Brazen pretty soon in her career. I thought she was terrific down the straight on her own yesterday on debut in the first race. So Exhilarates, for me, is the run of the day, and Pretty Brazen as the horse to follow. That wraps up a terrific day's racing around Australia yesterday, the Gold Coast and Flemington, the highlights. Linda Meach, also a highlight in Sydney.
This podcast was brought to you by rsn.net.au.